John chapter 4 and verse 35, Jesus says, "Lift up your eyes and look into the fields, for they are white unto the harvest." I want to ask you something. Do you believe that? I mean, why is it that so few congregations are really growing today? Why is it that Gallup says, when asked people who identified themselves as Christians if they had shared their faith in the past year, 95% of professed Christians said no, they had not? What is wrong? Can that possibly be true? I think there's something we can learn from John chapter 4 and verse 35. First of all, notice he says, "Lift up your eyes." I get from that that we need to be prospect conscious. We need to have our radar up. We need to be looking at people as either saved or lost. And if it appears that they are lost, we want to try to think in terms of what we can do to reach them, or at least give them an opportunity to hear the gospel. I think part of the problem has been that we're not doing sinful things or bad things. We just get busy. And we get distracted from our mission and what really matters as individuals and as a church. So first and foremost, if we're going to be successful, we have to be prospect conscious. Secondly, we have to believe the fields are white. We have to believe that if we do our part, that there are good people out there with good and honest hearts that will respond to the gospel if approached in the appropriate way. When does it become a dynamic, effective soul winner overnight? It takes time. It takes training. The Chinese have a saying, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. And so, as we look today at fencing lessons and how to properly wield the sword of the Spirit, we want to start off by simply asking the question, okay, what are the first steps to take? Let me suggest that the very first thing you need to do is to see yourself as a soul winner. You have to recognize that after you are grounded in the truth, the Bible says there comes a time when you ought to be a teacher. Of course, not everybody's supposed to be an evangelist or a public proclaimer. Not everybody's to be a public teacher. But everybody, male and female, are to be fishers of men and women. And I want you to know that there are people right now that know you and respect you and that are not intimidated by you that would never want to talk to a quote preacher. You know, being a gospel preacher opens some doors, but it closes lots of others. It really does. And sadly, some folks are intimidated. They would view me as some sort of professional, and they'll say, well, maybe I can get my preacher together with your preacher and I can sit down and listen to them both chat, but you can't expect me to, you know, take on some, quote, clergyman. So, honestly, there are a whole lot more people that you can reach than Brother Gerald can reach, or even one of your elders or your pastors. This is the glory of the ordinary. This is the opportunity for you in an appropriate way to share the gospel with your contacts, your friends, your relatives, of which most people have, on average, about 900 contacts when they start putting it all together. It's your warm list, they sometimes refer to it as. So don't think, when we talk about this subject, about talking to total strangers necessarily, or going door knocking. That's probably the most difficult and most ineffective method in the 21st century of winning souls. Now, if you did that long enough, even that would create some sort of response. But I'm not specifically a big door knocker. I want people to focus in on their own sphere of influence, which is a lot more effective and beneficial. And in congregations I've been in, once you start working your warm contacts, you stay so busy following up on them and their friends and their warm contacts, you hardly have time to worry about going after total strangers. So you've got to see yourself as a soul winner. You've got to believe that God knew what He was doing when He set up His church to be a ministry of all believers. Okay, do you see yourself that way? I hope so. Because it's a great blessing that God has asked all of us to be His hands and feet. Secondly, and we're going to talk about this, Lord willing, during the Bible class period. So I'm not going to really dwell on this morning, but you know, you've got to have assurance of your own salvation. I mean, if you're not confident that you're saved and that you're heaven bound, you don't have good news to share. And so I think a lot of times one of the problems is folks are not sure that they're saved. I mean, before you can make a disciple, maybe you better make sure first and foremost that you're a disciple. Now, frankly, if you're going to get up on a Saturday morning and come to a class at 10 o'clock, then you guys are the cream de creme. Thank you very much for being here. And there's a commitment level there that many people do not have. So it's probably not a problem for you. Thank you for your interest in spiritual things for coming. But thirdly, and this is where my judgment, I think the church as a whole needs to really take a look in the mirror and reflect and do a whole lot better, is give people proper tools and training. I've written some articles about So You Want to Be a Soul Winner recently in Biblical Insights, and I started off by saying that in most people's situations, I don't think the problem is want to. When my brethren sing, I want to be a soul winner for Jesus, I believe they mean that. You're here this morning because deep down in your heart, you think, wow, I would really like to know how I could be more effective in this work. The problem is not want to. In most people's lives, the problem is know how. How do I go about doing this? And what happens is uncertainty leads to inaction. And we don't give people training for the most part. Shame on us as a body. So I'm going to try in this 2-hour class session to give you some sort of basic framework that will help you to feel like you have a handle on the know-how. Because the problems generally are not motives, but motivation. So you need to give the know-how, and then you need to do everything you can to motivate. And that's where the evangelist and the elders come in, as you try to set yourself up, hopefully, as an example. And then you do everything you can in a loving way to motivate the flock. Of course, I have to chuckle at the guy who said the real challenge of being an evangelist is you've got to build the fire underneath the brethren without making their blood boil. And sometimes that's hard. So we want to try to give know-how and also give motivation as we look at this subject. And finally, you have to look at what works best in the 21st century. You never change the message, obviously. That the faith that once for all has been delivered, that's something that must not change. But the methods change with the culture around you. I mean, I read amazing stories in the 1900s to the 1930s about the success of tent meetings. We don't have tent meetings anymore because people don't come. But they used to come in droves. And I read amazing stories about what happened in the 20s, in the 30s, in the 40s, and the 50s, and even the early 60s about the success of the Fall and Spring Gospel Meeting. And candidly, they used to work pretty well. They don't work very well at all anymore. Not for reaching the community. And in the 70s through the 90s, typically, I'm sure Randall is similar to me. You have a 5 or 6 lesson, kind of multi-lesson approach where you bring people into your home. And, I used to have fairly good results with that. I don't anymore. I can't get people to show up, to agree to more than 2 or 3 times, much less 5. I mean, we can't get people to commit to a cell phone plan these days, much less 5 Tuesday nights in a row to talk about the Bible. It's just like pulling teeth. And so you don't give up. It's not that people are not interested. It's that people are too busy. And that includes us. So how do we get around that? Well, I think there's a one-lesson approach that gets your foot in the door that can be very effective and powerful And that's what I'm going to suggest that you consider using effectively here in this area. Of course, regardless of what method you decide works for you, you have to remember this. If we want to go beyond where we have been, we must be willing to do things differently than we've done in the past, right? I mean, we got to reassess what we're doing that's not working without changing the message and figure out, okay, what can we honestly say that we can do better? And my suggestion is, don't reinvent the wheel. Look at other faithful congregations that are growing and doing well, and they are out there, and see what you can learn from them and just duplicate that. That's what I do. I hear of a church that's growing, man, I'm on the phone. Sometimes I want to meet with that preacher somewhere and I say, tell me what you're doing that's working. And let's get the word out. And so, generally speaking, you find that what they've done is just simply tweak it a little bit so you can be all things to all men that you might win some. Does that make sense? All right, so we've got to figure out what works. And we have to think big and believe big and act big, and the results will be big. I encourage the folks at Kirkland to dream those small dreams, for they have not the courage to stir men's soul. I mean, you need to start looking out into the future and say, where does this congregation want to be in the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years? And you need to bring that before the throne of God and do so with great faith. When you come before the King, large petitions bringing, for His grace and power is such, thou can never ask too much. And oftentimes I think the reason why we just sort of mark time and keep house and don't seem to be moving forward and growing is because we're not even thinking in those terms. We're not praying and expecting God's blessings. We're not wisely staying focused on our mission. So, let's get back to our discussion here of the big picture of the Bible and why I believe this is such an important message for today. That is a picture of Archimedes. He's a Greek mathematician. He is most famous for this amazing statement. Give me a lever long enough and a fulcrum on which to place it, and I shall move the world. And I'm told scientifically that there's a real basis for that concept. It's amazing what a difference the right tool makes. Takes away the fear if you know what to say. It takes away the feeling of uncertainty if you've got a track to run on. So enter the big picture of the Bible. It truly is amazing what a difference the right tool can make in evangelism. And I apologize for that PowerPoint slide. I have a later version of PowerPoint than what we're running, and so some of these slides are going to be maybe a little off, but hopefully you can get the point. I feel like one of the jobs that I have as an evangelist, and one of the things that the elders in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 12, are supposed to do, pastors of the flock or elders, are to equip the saints. And so one of the things that I think an evangelist should do is certainly set a good example in evangelism, but also look for opportunities so that the saints can feel like that they are equipped and they have the tools and they have the wherewithal to go about and do God's work. I mean, how do you take a congregation that's sort of plateaued or declining and turn that thing around and so the trajectory is a slow and steady and solid movement upward? That's what we want. I'm not interested in fast and furious. I'm interested in discipleship and consistent, steady growth that lasts. Let me give you a little welcome from the Kirkland Church family, where I've been about the last year. And this was our congregational portrait taken on September 8, 2013. I recommend that you consider every year, maybe in the spring or in the fall, having a congregational portrait. so that when you go to a website or when you have your advertisements, you put the focus not on a picture of your building, but the people. I mean, we love to preach that the church is the people, right? The blood-bought body of Christ. But so frequently when we have any kind of advertisement, we sell a picture of our building. At the same time, we're trying to teach people the church is not the building. Does anybody see that as a little bit of a disconnect? I do. So why not focus on the church as the people? And I show this slide typically for visitors. Welcome to the from the Kirkland Church family. And we just 2 weeks ago had our second picture, which is this one here, and about 25. Whoops. How'd that happen? Something's going wrong here. About 25 people were gone on that. There we go, on the picture day. And so, about a year ago, we were running about somewhere between 100 and 110. Now our average is about 140. Okay, that's pretty good percentage-wise growth. And if you project that out, a couple years, we'll be up to about 200. And they were considering selling their building because they didn't think they could afford both the preacher and keep up the building, and the building was so much bigger than they needed. And I said, no, don't sell the building. Let's figure out how to fill the building up. Talking about. They go, okay, show us how. I said, okay, let's talk about that. And now we're all excited because, you know, we do have a big auditorium and we're not going to run across problems with running out of room. Because that auditorium can seat up to 400 people if you use the overflow room. So we got a good while here to fill up that building. And that is exciting. And it's amazing how that enthusiasm grows. Let me tell you about the revival that God has been blessing the Kirkland Church with. And so much of this revolves around equipping the saints and how to use the big picture of the Bible. The Sunday PM and Wednesday PM attendance has tripled and the contribution has doubled. We started off talking about Nehemiah, that God has been favorable to us and the people have a mind to work. We've had a lot of big picture presentations and we've been blessed with 14 baptisms. Now, I hope for more. I have to tell you, up in the Northwest, that's kind of challenging territory. for a variety of reasons that I won't go into. But whatever, you just have to work harder. And you may find the same thing here. That's all right. You just have to just make more presentations. And our elders got together, and I would encourage the elders here to do the same, and they put together a vision statement. And again, I apologize for what's happened here with the PowerPoints, but this is what they came up with. At Kirkland, we are people redeemed by Christ's blood who seek to worship God reverently in truth, who glorify God through our unconditional love, caring and service of one another. We are growing in knowledge and truth and joy and commitment, sharing our hope with others that God's light might shine in a dark world. You notice that their desire is to work toward 200 in Sunday attendance, which would be about a doubling from where we were a year before. And folks in the congregation, you know, they believe the best is yet to come. And they believe that the Lord's going to bless our efforts. And we focus in on reverent worship, authentic relationships, and motivating love. And so having some clear sense of vision for each local congregation, I think, goes a long way. And I want you to notice that the last part of this, we are growing in knowledge of truth and in joy and commitment, sharing our hope with others that God's light might shine in a dark world. Well, that all has to do with soul winning, doesn't it? And soul winning training. So that you invite people to Christ, equip them for service, and empower them for greatness. So, first thing you have to do is determine where are we headed here. So, let's look at five stages of evangelistic maturity. And let's hope that this one will read for us. All right. A lot of people are in stage one. Remember, 95% of Christians in a given year report they've not shared their faith. All right. So in many instances, they're avoiding. They never share the gospel with anyone. The idea is let others do it. If the subject comes up, retreat. They kind of feel unprepared and unwilling to share the gospel, and they kind of sometimes act like that's what I pay my money for. You know, it's a good idea to support preachers here and elsewhere through the treasury, but you can't really pay somebody to do your personal teaching for you. That's not the point of supporting folks from our contribution. Then next we have reluctance. This is where you occasionally will discuss religion with someone, but they kind of have to bring it up, and it's usually only when you're backed in a corner and you don't feel very prepared, and you kind of think, well, that's what my preacher's for. Now, what I'm about to tell you, I am not making up. About 3 weeks ago, we had a visitor with us that was a member of the church from another congregation. He was a young man, about 20. And I said, you know, if you're interested, I'd love to get with you and share with you the big picture of the Bible. And that way you could have a tool that you could use to talk to your friends about the gospel. And he kind of looked at me puzzled and he said, why would I want to do that? I said, well, I thought perhaps you would have a lot of your friends that are lost and you might be interested in helping them know the way to the Savior. He goes, you mean you want me to kind of be like a preacher? And I said, I'm not talking about standing up from the pulpit and preaching a sermon. I'm talking about learning a lesson that you could share with your peers who would listen to you that might convict their heart and help them to be saved. He goes, you want me to do that? Me? What? I said, you think that's only my job? He goes, well, you're the preacher. And I thought, sir, we are on two completely different wavelengths here. But the poor kid, he just kind of like, I guess he grew up in an environment where nobody ever expected him to share his faith. He thought that was only for preachers. Why would I want to do that? He says, you have got to be kidding me. Now listen, a congregation that doesn't even try to share the gospel, is that a sound congregation? You know, I want you folks to understand something. I very clearly do not believe that we ought to be supporting out of the treasury colleges or benevolent organizations, that we ought not to be involved in things that some of the churches of Christ out there are involved in. And that's all well and good, but I don't want to define myself as an individual or as a congregation by what we're not doing. Well, we don't do this and we don't do that. Well, good for you if it's not scriptural. But define yourself primarily by what you are and what you are doing, and have a positive message, and focus in on souls, not just what you don't do that other people are doing that they shouldn't. Does that make sense? All right, how about being equipped? Occasionally, you'll share the gospel with someone. You kind of need a church program or a push. You spend some time in preparation. You prefer to assist generally someone else because you lack confidence. All right? Still struggle with the fear of rejection. Anybody here struggle with that fear? Probably the biggest barrier to soul winning. Number four, how about being confident? Willing, able to share the gospel with just about anyone? We'll go for it when the opportunity presents itself, spend significant time preparing, comfortable with the message, but frequently lack zeal, and if the truth were known, sort of more guilt-motivated than joy-motivated. And then we have someone who's committed. Aggressively pursue sharing the gospel with anyone, anytime, anywhere. Passionately consumed with the mission to sow the seed. Seek opportunities to share. Encourages and tries to help others. And primarily joy motivated. How many want to be at number five? Amen. You know what? With this kind of training and the big picture of the Bible, generally speaking, people move maybe one or two categories over kind of gradually. But I've seen people jump from one to five once they get the hang of this. And they realize they've got a track to run on. And they start seeing results. Man, that can just turn a church around. And it doesn't take too many successes for people to decide, in our case, hey, we got hope. We're not going to sell this building. We're going to fill it. And that was just with our first four or five baptisms. And I was flying up here before I started the work full time. So It was kind of funny to me. Elder said, you know, you're up here Sunday to preach, you know, if you want to go back to San Diego on Monday, that's fine. And I go, why would I want to do that? I go, the most important work I do is behind the scenes. And they go, well, what do you mean? I go, well, let's beat the bushes. Give me some contacts. Let's share the gospel. And they go, okay. So, at any rate, I started talking to members, and they set up big picture presentations, and we had 4 baptisms just in a couple of trips. I hadn't seen that in years. And that turned their whole mentality around. It's just amazing what some success in sharing the gospel does, and it changes your mentality. The most important work I do is not on Sunday. It's when I share the gospel with the lost during the week. Let me tell you how bad this has gotten. I get calls all the time from churches saying, could you please recommend an evangelist who's evangelistic? We're trying to find one. Really? Literally. It is hard to find preachers that are really serious about winning souls on a one-on-one. It really is. I'm glad you got a good one who understands this principle. But how sad. Is this about just talking to ourselves? The preacher's not evangelistic. How do you expect the members to be? For heaven's sakes. So, what do we do to get from 1 to 5? Well, let me share with you a testimonial of somebody that I shared the big picture with January 31st, 2013. She now is married a young Christian fellow. And I think this pretty much says it all. It took only 55 minutes, and my whole purpose in life was changed forever. The big picture is truly genius. I personally had little Bible knowledge, but I desired to know more about coming to Christ and what the Holy Bible is really all about. I wanted to understand it, know it, and apply it to my life. But when I opened the Bible, I was often confused by the language and misunderstood what the messages were telling me. However, the big picture explained all the key main points of what the truth is. I'm living proof that when you keep things simple, short, and sweet, like the big picture, the message that is taught to you is going to have an everlasting impact within you. I'm truly grateful to the big picture message. I didn't think I could ever hear about the Bible's truth in such an incredible way. So, we had about 10 people at my house that night. She showed up, and we introduced each other. You know, I like to have a lot of people there so they can witness the presentation. That's the best way to learn. And after about an hour, you know, we asked a few questions, and I kind of counted the cost with her, and we all went down to the building, and we texted a bunch of people, and a bunch of other people showed up. It was just a great opportunity of rejoicing with Chrissy. And we still contact each other. She's very faithful and just loves the Lord and is so thankful that her fiancé heard about the big picture and asked if I would present this to her. And of course, I was glad to do so. Now, if you had somebody who said, I really want to understand how the whole Bible fits together and what the gospel plan of salvation is, and I've only got about an hour, would you know what to tell them? Well, you will after this weekend is over, okay? So, now let me tell you another thing. This is Marianna Fisher. And I asked her, after she went through the big picture training classes at Kirkland, what this meant to her. Marianna Fisher's in her early 60s. And she had tried and failed and just sort of given up, which is a lot of people's story. So we had classes on, I had a class on Tuesday and Thursday, and people could choose which night they wanted to attend. And we had on average about 8 to 10 people in each class. So we had people sign up, like I hope you'll do after this weekend, to learn the big picture. This is what she said about it. She said, it was simple and started exactly where I have started when I teach the young children's classes. I was amazed at the simplicity yet conciseness of presenting God's plan of salvation. She says, there's a lot of material to cover, but it's manageable with study and practice. The affirming power of my own faith each time I go through the presentation is indescribable. And I came to a much deeper understanding of the price of sin, the meaning and purpose of animal blood sacrifices, more importantly, the sacrifice Christ made for us and why baptism is so important. She goes on to say, more importantly, this gives me a tool to set myself aside and simply present the gospel of our Lord and God to anyone who was willing. It freed me from feeling responsible for, quote, converting anyone, and allowed the Lord to simply use me as a tool to plant seed. In that respect, it took much of the apprehension out of sharing the good news. I've really learned that it's very difficult for people to change, and there are many different hearts out there. I need to be more self-examining of my own heart so the Lord can say of me, she did all that she could. She says it definitely has brought about a change of attitude for me. So, somebody says, can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, that's not true for Marianna Fisher. In fact, I was really encouraged. Dee McGowan is about 55. Said she had tried in the past, never been successful. Finally got her mother and stepdad, who were in their late 70s, to agree to hear the big picture. She's very shy, but she had the courage and asked everybody for prayers to share this with her mom and dad. They opened their eyes. We went down to the building and baptized them both. And they are there every service and are just so excited. And the fellow, Dick, he's like 79. And he says, I've been looking for this my entire life. And his family members were members of the church, but they never knew how to bring the subject up until the big picture. I wonder how many opportunities are there just all around us that we aren't even aware. Now, this is my dear friend Kathy Adams. Kathy Adams is 72, and we actually grew up together at the Lassen Street Congregation in Southern California. And so I was there at the West County Ventura Congregation, and she said this. She says, my experience of the big picture of the Bible teaching tool began in April of 2013. That's when I was there in a meeting similar to this. Janine's smiling. You know the Adams, don't you? The PowerPoint presentation, flip chart, business cards, and Ken Craig's booklet were all made available. I found the method of reaching the lost was understandable and relatively easy to learn. For years, I've tried to invite friends, neighbors, coworkers to hear the gospel at a church service or attend a home Bible study with little success. I learned the big picture presentation and was eager to share it. I presented the PowerPoint slideshow from my laptop. The young college-aged woman heard the message, and 2 weeks later, she was baptized into Christ. She is now faithfully attending services and attends a weekly class to help her as she grows in grace. Now, I want you to notice what she says next. I believe this is a scriptural way to teach the lost in a form that is comprehensive and in an easy-to-follow format. I believe that any willing Christian can learn the big picture of the Bible and teach it to others. I will never be the same again. I finally have hope our congregation can grow. I am 72 years young. Now, let me tell you the backstory behind this. I had a presentation just like I did last night on The Greatest Need. And then we went out to eat at a restaurant. And I went out to eat with a couple of the deacons and the Adams that were with me. And six people there. And they said, well, that may be working, you know, really well where you're at. But, you know, this is really a tough area. And we just don't really think that people are that interested. And I just don't really know that that would work for us. So I hear that all the time. So I kind of smiled. And so I said, you know, sometimes the best prospects are right underneath our nose. And I kind of said a prayer about this. And I noticed that the waitress by the name of Lynn was very friendly and just seemed like the type of person that might be responsive. And so I said, how about Lynn? And she had her name tag on. And they go, who? I go, Lynn, that's our waitress. Oh, did you think about asking her if she'd like to hear the big picture? Well, no, we don't usually do that. And I go, well, I like to ask the waiter or waitress sometimes if they'd like to hear. What do you think? And they go, okay. So we got done. I said, Lynn, you've just been great waiting on us, and you obviously have a servant's heart. And I really meant that. She said, thank you. And I said, we're Christians here. We worship over here at the West County Ventura Church of Christ. And we have this little presentation. It takes less than an hour. It shows you how the whole Bible fits together, Old Testament, New Testament, just all these neat interrelationships. And here's a little big picture business card. And we'd like to, at your convenience, see if we could sit down and share this with you sometime. She goes, you know, I've been praying for something like this. She goes, I've been looking and confused. Maybe this to help answer my questions. Thank you so much. And so she gave us her information. And Lynn is the lady that Kathy Adams is talking about. But it was so sort of curious because she walked away thanking us for the opportunity. And I said, now, what were you saying about no one's interested around here? I go, the very lady that was waiting on us was interested. But you just assumed she wasn't. That's the problem, folks. They are everywhere. This lady here is on fire. 72 years old when she first learned how to be a successful soul winner. Sharing the big picture is an awesome opportunity and blessing. And yet, I have to tell you, it has its critics. There are some that are uncomfortable with a single lesson approach. Now, I want to make something really clear. This is not a one-shot approach. That is completely unscriptural. This isn't where you just share one lesson approach and get somebody wet and then just go on about your business. This is sort of a way to get your foot in the door. This is a one lesson approach to be followed up with a lot of additional teaching and discipleship later. But because of the popularity of the 5 and 6 week multi-level approach, a lot of folks just kind of say, oh, you can't convert somebody in that amount of time and all that kind of stuff. And I just kind of look at them and I go, do you believe in following the Bible as our example? Of course, people are going to say yes. I go, well, you just have to ask yourself. Are you going to follow what the Bible tells us in the book of Acts? Or are you going to stick to just what you're used to because of what's become kind of the traditional 5 or 6 lesson approach, which frankly doesn't work anymore for the most part? And I just have to be bold about this. I want you to look at all these cases of conversion in Acts. We're familiar with all of these, right? The book of Acts consists of 40% of sermon outlines to non-Christians. If you want to figure out how to reach the lost, the best place to go is the book of Acts, because the epistles is all written to whom? Churches, people that are already Christians. Now, with all due respect, what do all these things have in common? Every single one of these cases of conversion, after hearing the gospel, how many times did they respond? One lesson. And the one that's most impressive to me is Acts chapter 16. You know, in Acts 2, those were devout Jews from every nation under heaven. They already had a religious background. Not the jailer. Apparently, he learned about the Lord Jesus from hearing him singing hymns. And then Paul says, save yourself, and well, what do I do? And he, obviously, in the same hour of the night, isn't that interesting? It says he taught them the gospel, and he took them out and baptized them. So if you don't particularly like this approach, that's fine, but do not tell me it's not scriptural. I mean, this is very scriptural. And of course, after that, they continued to teach them whatsoever things the Lord had commanded them, right? So, if you can do that in the New Testament with the raw pagan, we can do that with people that we meet today. I was very skeptical about shifting over from what I had been doing for 20 plus years to something new. You know, nobody wants to change their church. You know what I mean? I mean, it's work. And I didn't like to get out of my comfort zone any more than anybody else. But I kept on hearing about really significant results that finally caused me about 7 or 8 years ago to decide I'm going to try this big picture thing. Wow, I'm so glad that I did. I heard the story of a prison ministry up in Northern California, and the guy had been doing the more traditional 4 or 5 lesson approach. Kind of, you lead with the Bible as the authority, and you lead with discussion about the 1-2 church and those kind of things. And not that those aren't true statements, but he said, I would, you know, work 4 days a week, 32 hours, plugging away. He goes, it wasn't hard to get these inmates to study. They were kind of a captive audience, to say the least. Anyway, but he would have like 3 to 5 conversions a year. I mean, a lot of presentations and very few results. So he finally decided, well, I'm going to speed this up. I'm going to talk to more people. And I'm going to try the big picture approach. The next year, he had 75 people respond to the gospel. He said, it was like turning the light switch on. The reason is he was finally plugging into the power of the gospel instead of talking first about the effect of the church. Start with the cause material before you start with the effect material, seems wise to me. And Dan DeGarmo, who basically publishes the big picture of the Bible for Ken Craig, He's a dynamic soul winner. He went to the little town of Chillicothe, Ohio, where he was raised. Started with a little group of 9 people. And they started off by simply encouraging folks, these 9, to ask people, will you give me an hour of your time for me to share my faith with you? That was his approach. 17 words. And he was amazed at how many people said, okay, I'll give you 1 hour. And they have had many, many conversions. They've built a building that seats over 200 people. And they have over 120, 30 in attendance. All in about 10 years. 9 to over 100. From scratch, pretty much. And their sole method of reaching people is asking people if they hear the big picture of the Bible. Whoa! That impresses me. Does that impress you? And then Ken Craig told me, he's a good friend of mine, he's the author of The Big Picture. He said, you know, Brent, I've been getting a 50% response rate when I share this. I said, what? Yeah. I'm amazed at the people who will agree when I ask because it's just 1 hour. And then once I sit them down and share it with them, about half eventually obey. I go, man, I'm not getting anywhere near that. So finally I decided, I guess I'm going to have to change my chart, you know, change my approach. And so when I moved to the El Cajon congregation, Johnson Avenue, when I got there, I decided, okay, I'm going to start really just emphasizing this big picture and look for all these leads and share it with everybody I can. This is the most exciting thing. The first 15 people I shared the big picture of the Bible with in San Diego in 2010, 2011 said yes. 15 in a row. Man, that was edifying. In fact, it was rather interesting. When I came to the 16th person that agreed to let me share it with them, I got to the end and I said, well, you want to take care of this right now or you want to wait and kind of have some more people show up and attend your baptism? And he goes, no, I don't think I'm interested. I go, what? No, I don't think this is for me. Really? I mean, I thought, wow. I'm shocked the person said no. Instead of pleasantly surprised, they said yes. And the good news is, about a year later, some of the other folks in the congregation worked with this fellow, and he eventually did obey. So I guess that was a delayed yes, and I didn't know it. But I thought, wow. Now, it didn't keep up that way. I don't leave the wrong impression. But still, on average, in the 3 years that I was in San Diego, I probably made about, I figure, 110 or so presentations of the big picture. And a little less than half over time said yes. Man, that was exciting. So, it just seems to me that results demand respect, wouldn't you say? So, from August 20th, 2010 to August 20th, 2013, I had 57 baptisms at the Johnson Avenue congregation. Think if you were a part of that, you'd be excited? Now, 3 never said they'd be members of Johnson Avenue. I tell folks you've got to make a choice. First, you need to come to Christ, and then secondly, you need to decide where you're going to worship. So some people choose to worship elsewhere, which is okay. If some place is closer, they have some other ties. So 3 never said they'd be members. 35 of 54 were still faithful in attendance. So you got 38 of 38 who placed membership, and some of them placed membership because they heard that we were active in soul winning, and that's hard to find these days. So you'll attract good people when you begin to have this kind of reputation. 10 were restored, 9 of those 10 are faithful. So in that amount of time, we positively impacted 105 souls. So that was pretty good. I mean, I was thankful for, you know, that kind of involvement and interest and enthusiasm. Now, let me tell you, even though you're talking about close to 50% response rate, a couple years down the road, you wound up having a little less than 50% as far as retention rate. And, you know, I was so surprised at how many in the congregation focused on the ones that didn't stick or didn't remain faithful rather than the many, many that did. Listen, I have never known of any congregation that went out and really successfully shared the gospel that didn't have a significant amount of people fall away. And you know what? The parable of the sower has not been repealed. Right? You sow the seed everywhere you can. You scatter the seed. It falls on different kinds of grounds, different kind of hearts. Two of the four respond and then fall away. One, in time of temptation, they fall away. The other, they get choked out by the cares and concerns of this world. I have no idea how many people fell away during the New Testament era, but based on the parable of the sower, a good percentage of them did. What you have to realize is that the only way you can find the gems, the Chrissy Osters that I just mentioned, the ones that just grow up and thrive and become such great assets in the Lord's kingdom, is to be willing to share the gospel with anyone who will listen. And then just wait and see what kind of heart they have and how they respond. Don't be overly discouraged about folks that do fall away. Now, I hope you can get that number up. I would love to. But generally speaking, that's what you find. And that's got to be okay up front. I just want to be honest with you. You're going to have some folks fall away. And you know who are the ones that are the most critical of the ones who fall away? The ones who aren't doing anything. You know, Abraham Lincoln said that in order to have the right to criticize, you first have to have the heart to help. Doesn't that make sense? And so I finally told some of the critics at Johnson Avenue, I said, listen, what did you have before we were doing the big picture? They kind of put their head down. I go, I don't know, just tell me. Well, you know, maybe 3 or 4 a year. I said, okay, would you rather have 100% of 3 or 4? Or 50% of 57. What works better in the long run? You do the math. I mean, come on, folks! So, this is scriptural. It does work. And it takes work. And you're going to have some folks fall away. And you've got to just understand that's just got to be a part of what you have to deal with. Okay, any questions about that before we take our break? I never know where I'm going to end up here, so this is, I guess, as good a place as any. Anybody got any questions or feedback? Isn't it exciting to hear about other places that are doing well? We don't talk about that enough. Yes, sir?
Do you know of any number that have fallen away that eventually return?
Sure. Some do. Uh-huh. I don't know a huge amount, but some do. And, of course, a lot of it has to do not with doctrinal issues, but with social issues. I have this lesson I call Operation Assimilation, which is where you've got to make sure these people are included in your network of friends and associates. And a lot of times, they don't replace friends that they had in the world with friends in the church. And that doesn't happen. Usually, within about 6 months, they'll fall away. So, you know, I hate to break it to you, but, you know, we're supposed to be a family. And if they don't feel a part of the family, even if they understand intellectually, oftentimes they get drawn away for that purpose. So, it's all got to be working together. It's not just about the doctor. Anybody else? Yes, sir.
I was to say, obviously we're not supposed to be afraid of the gospel of Christ. I was going to say that a lot of us work in occupations these days where it's actually against the
policy. I know.
You actually lose your job.
Isn't that sad? Caught proselyte.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know, I wouldn't violate company policy, but company policy does not say that if you go out to lunch with somebody on your own time, that you can't, under those circumstances, say something or invite the person into your home and bring that opportunity up over dinner. I'm just amazed at how there's a bond when you share a meal with someone. And I get a kick out of Queen Esther, who was scared to death to bring up the topic about you're about ready to destroy the Jewish nation, of which I am one. And it's funny in that account. Remember what she did to the king, Xerxes? She said, King, I want to fix you a banquet, fix you a meal. And he goes, what do you want? And she goes, let's have another banquet. So she fixes him 2 meals. Then after 2 meals and his stomach is full, then she has the courage to ask him, and he's very responsive. Isn't that interesting? So people are more receptive when you've already demonstrated you have a care and concern for them. And, you know, looking to cultivate friendship, show that you care, and out of that comes an opportunity to say, can I take an hour of your time to share something that think could really open your eyes. And even if you don't agree, I think you'd be benefited by it. So that's the kind of thing. But everybody has to be making that their hobby, for lack of a better term. I mean, you know, how much time do people put into whatever they choose as their hobby? You know, why not make soul winning what we want to do on the side? And what puts, you know, the sparkle in our eyes and the bounce in our step? Somebody else? Okay, let's take about a 5-minute break. We'll come back, sing a song of praise, and we'll get into our second session.